Hi, I'm Jesse Hirsch. Welcome to the Future Herd. As a livestock farmer, I spend a lot of time thinking about how our relationship with animals is evolving. In fact, I'm happiest when I'm out with my goats on the back part of our property, kind of free ranging, and I kind of imagine myself going back in time as if I'd been doing this practice for hundreds and hundreds of years. For generations, farming has relied on intuition, experiences, and the five senses when stepping into a field or returning to the barn. But what happens when you take that deep human wisdom, that kind of ancient sensibility that I feel when I'm with my goats, and combine it with cutting-edge AI, bioacoustics, even digital twins? Are we looking at a future where technology distances us from our livestock? Or can it actually help us build a deeper, more empathetic understanding of animal well-being while still securing the prosperity and profitability of the farm? To help us deal with this question, today we've got a fantastic guest, Suresh Raja, a bioengineer and research chair in digital livestock farming from Dalhousie University, who splits his time between animal science and computer science. Suresh is one of those rare researchers who doesn't just look at technology as a tool to boost efficiency, but as a bridge to rethink how we care for animals, how we manage our operations, and most importantly, protect our food security. Again, I feel that we have this real opportunity to use technology not as an either-or, but a yes-and. And there is something really profound in the way in which, as farmers, we connect with non-human intelligences, aka animals, and lo and behold, we're describing AI as another non-human intelligence, which is why I am so enthusiastic, so curious about what happens when AI and agriculture intersect. And my new friend Suresh certainly doesn't disappoint in provoking, in moving the conversation forward to not only imagine a new world of agriculture, but to actively help make it happen. All right, let's tune in. Suresh, welcome to the Future Herd.
Thank you, Jesse.
Now, I have to say, I'm particularly excited to talk to you today, not just because I am an avid learner of AI, but I'm also a livestock farmer. And so you're really the first person that I've met who so brilliantly connects those two domains. But the first question that I ask all guests who come onto the podcast, and there's no wrong answer, it's really an intuitive kind of gut question. What does the future mean to you?
Like future in the sense of adaptation of artificial intelligence, or future of the animal agriculture farming here in Canada. It's going to be multifactorial, how we can, everything is interconnected in a way. So it has to be context aware when decisions are being made. We cannot just jump and look through a small window and try to make a decision out of it. We need to have a little more effort in comprehensively understanding the whole landscape from multifactorial, multiple point of view, and then go about it.
Right on. A very technical answer. Again, there's no wrong answers. It's always curious to see kind of how people respond. Now, the second question I like to ask people really gets into their kind of origins or backgrounds. And I try to make it kind of specific and abstract at the same time. And when I researched your background, both kind of intellectual and professional, The question that really came out at me, given the range of interests you have, and at the same time, I suspect a range of opportunities that have come your way, why biology? Like, I can understand why agriculture, I can understand why technology or engineering or even computer science and artificial intelligence, but why biology? What was it about biology that drew you in and kind of kept your interest?
So just to be, as a disclaimer, I'm a classically trained agricultural engineer, all 3 degrees, master's and PhD in ag engineering, or nowadays they call it bioengineering. So a bird or an animal, if you look at a cow or a pig or a swine or a horse or a sheep or a poultry or a duck or a turkey, it's a biological entity. So naturally, biology takes precedence. As I use the word interconnected, biology alone cannot provide the solution. So we bring in the multidisciplinary field, aspects of engineering, aspects of computer science in biology, along with data analytics to provide enriched quality of life for the animals, but at the same time, offer ways for sustainable profitability for the producers and farmers. So it's truly multidisciplinary in that angle.
Well, and that's what fascinates me, because on the one hand, most of the people in my life that I've encountered who are in the engineering side, in the technology side, they have no interest in animals. They often have no interest in human beings. But you approach this not just as an interest in animals, but to your point, you're looking at their well-being. You're looking at the sustainability while also looking at prosperity and the profitability of an operation. I guess as a follow-up, still in the context of, you know, where you're coming from intellectually, how did you come to such a well-rounded perspective? I mean, often researchers and intellectuals, they tend to really specialize and kind of hone in on stuff. But to your point, you come at this very multidisciplinary, but even more so, there's an ethics or a philosophy to your work that also seems to be coming at things from as many perspectives as possible.
Yeah, indeed. If you look at my employment, I'm currently joint appointed between the Faculty of Agriculture and Truro campus within the Department of Animal Science and Aquaculture. And then the 50% of our appointment is in the Halifax main campus within the Faculty of Computer Science, Artificial Intelligence focus. So, when a farmer, they walk and then they park their car just maybe half of 500, 300 meters away from the barn. As soon as they park their vehicle, truck or car, they use all of their 5 senses to evoke and to make an assessment of what's going on. Oh, there is something iffy today. There is an anomaly. Something is not right today. So how do? They use all their 5 senses. They smell it. Sometimes they hear sound. If there is a based on the wind flow that touches their skin, they use all of these to sometimes their own intuition based on decades of experience to say meaningful critical statement. Very often those statements are true. And then once they enter, it's exactly the way they have perceived. But at the same time, maybe a city kid or someone who is not familiar, when they go, they may make lots of mistakes. So there is a lot of subjectivity and intuition is involved. So how do we go about converting this subjective to objective with the help of technology through a comprehensive way? So we can't really make statements, decision-making in the livestock agriculture using one modality, one way of approach, because everything is interconnected. How do we actually move the needle from reactive to predictive through proactive approaches with the help of this multidisciplinarity, with the help of a lens that can see through the different thread that is connected to be able to come to a judgment, an assessment, an evaluation that can help the lives of the animals at the same time, the decision-making capacity of the farmer.
Absolutely brilliant. That was such a great answer, because it kind of connects the need to have the intuitive level of the farmer with the data-driven needs of the researcher and the kind of systemic level awareness that affords. I mean, I could keep with my questions building up a kind of narrative, but I kind of want to jump to one of the bigger questions I wanted to talk to you about, which is digital twins and the rise of digital twin technology. Because what you just described in that answer was, on the one hand, a lot of really human stuff like senses and intuition, but also a lot of complicated systems and that rely upon a lot of data. So assume that many of our listeners right now have never heard of the concept of a digital twin. So if you could first kind of introduce it and then describe how it applies to livestock and the way in which you use it yourself or you've seen digital twins be applied to livestock agriculture.
So for the livestock farming, digital twin is actually very new. There is absolutely no commercial products available yet out there. But when we look at the evolution of digital twin in other sector, it was introduced like 40 years ago by NASA for space-related applications, some recently in biomedical manufacturing applications. So when we look at the word twin, so if we have, you know, twin babies born, one is more or less similar to the other in terms of the behavior, in terms of how they express themselves. So it's more like an avatar or a simulation, we could say. From the animal farming, animal agriculture perspective, when we use the word digital twin, so it is a cyber-physical system. So we can interconnect it with multiple sensors. For example, when we deploy different cameras, different sound recording devices, and other hardware, and collect these multimodality data, sound data, which is like audio or vocalization from the animals, temperature and humidity-related data, environmental data of the animal husbandry system, and also the physiological data, maybe the respiration rate, the blinking, and the biological health-related data. If there are some video cameras that measures movement and motility and action of these birds or cows, how do they move around, how long they make different steps, what side of the body the cow lies, is it right side or the left side? All of these complex different data are continuously collected. And then we use artificial intelligence to build an avatar, a metaverse that can mimic the exact nature of these animals or the animal husbandry system. And we go about making decisions. So right now, dashboards are super common. You walk into a barn, you can see multiple dashboards. People are also using mobile applications to, in a real-time fashion, to look at, hey, what's going on in my barn in terms of temperature and humidity. They can even see the calving of the cows, etc. That's most of the time, it's what happened before in the past. But twin is a slightly different concept. The idea here is, can we be able to run what-if scenarios? What will happen in the future if I change something? So we could do a variety of simulation-based experiments without subjecting the animal to go through certain external stressors. For example, as a country here in Canada, we rely on a different country for an inflow of supplement for our feed for the animals. If there is a delay or a hiccup in terms of the supply chain and logistics, what will happen in about 45 days? So I don't have to completely run the scenario and use my physical, biological resources to do that. Digital twin can do the whole thing with a fraction of cost in a smaller amount of time. like that, we can run a lot of what if scenarios can be run. So there are many advantages to it, even from the sustainability net zero perspective. If I am a dairy farmer producing milk, can I be able to go about in determining for me as a farmer who have 100 cows, for me to be able to produce 1 liter of milk, how much of methane I'm emitting? What is the methane equivalent emission per liter of milk? Right now, it's a very complex formula. It's really tricky to arrive at that number, but digital twin provides a more holistic way of deriving that information. So is the case with the egg farmer. For me to produce a dozen egg, how much of kilogram of carbon dioxide or methane my particular poultry or turkey farm is emitting. So I can run and understand these scenarios in a much more easy manner. There are also welfare aspects to it. For example, you might have heard of the terminology deep fake. So it's a deep fake. Some politicians who are not real politicians, they suddenly appear on a very big screen in a bigger meeting and then make statements, pretend to make statements, but those are not real politicians. That statements may have very serious consequences. So technology has been used for wrong purposes, but the same technology can be put for good use. For example, if the mother cow is being sent to slaughterhouses for some reasons, can we be able to use the deepfake technology via metaverse, virtual reality, to emulate biologically, physically, create that twinning of the cow so that the cow can appear suddenly and help to soothe the baby call? So there are different elements and different application scenarios possible with the help of the new technologies.
Well, and let me ask two questions that kind of dig a little deeper into what you were describing. And, you know, the first is, where is the data to enable all that simulation coming from? Because you gave a range of examples that in and of themselves are kind of fascinating. And I suspect this gets into the research that you've been engaged in for your entire career. But the other question to that is, are there some animals, are there some livestock that there is more data available than others, and therefore it's easier to create twins for those kinds of animals? I mean, dairy cows, for example, strike me as one that would have a lot of data available. What are the animals that we need to be collecting more data, where we need to be working more closely maybe with farmers to be collecting that data so that we can enable these kinds of twins?
Sure. Yeah. So that also opens up the question of the small scale farmers versus large scale farming. You know, somebody who is subscribing to certain solutions via Lely or Dealaval or a bigger company, and all the cows are having some wearable sensors around the neck. So they collect these movement related data. So most of the farms nowadays, they have this automated robotic systems for milking in dairy systems, but the small scale farms, no, they still rely on partial manual based milking. So the access and the enriched data availability is much more limited. That also decides in terms of the quality of the twinning we can develop. At the same time, when we enter into a poultry barn or a broiler or a laying hen enriched quality system, the model changes because we typically make decisions not per animal, it's per flock, group of birds, and then decisions are made based on those group-based intervention strategies on farm daily management systems. So the access to data also changes dramatically. Typically, environmental data, belt conveyor, number of eggs, of course, feed and water are continuously available for all the animals. animals, but to be able to quantify per animal feed, even in the dairy system, when we walk into it, we drive a tractor and we basically provide feed on both sides. There is no way we quantify how much each cow is actually consuming. There are different back calculations based on the chewing capacity, the collar sensor. They kind of approximately try to guess, but that's never accurate. So there is a trend in terms of adopting what we call as non-invasive, without touching and prodding the animal, can we be able to collect more data? So the computer vision systems are gaining a lot of momentum. We install different kinds of cameras at specific locations. They capture the movement of the cow. They also look at how often the cow consumes based on their different biometric profiling and morphometric features. We can actually measure not only the body weight of the cow, the lameness, but also the consumption rate. So it's more of an individual precision dairy consumption and nutrition assessment is possible. So the availability of data is very heterogeneous. It depends on a number of factors, the availability of the sensors and so on. So yes, so that is directly proportional to the quality of the twinning we are looking at developing. So the more the sensors, the more the heterogeneous data, the quality of the data, the better for the twinning model.
Well, and I'm fascinated by what you said about the computer vision, because certainly having cameras or installing cameras within operations, large and small, is becoming increasingly accessible. But I'd also love to hear you elaborate on kind of the research process, like the way in which, you know, you work with students, you work with farms. I mean, how are you able to kind of develop these types of methods and gather this kind of data? And what are the limitations? And does open source play a role? And I'm kind of, I'm not really coming up with a clear question. I'm kind of throwing out thoughts as I go through this. But you raised a really interesting point when talking about the difference between large and small producers. Is it possible to start empowering small producers to be collecting data and being able to participate in some of these larger research projects and larger simulations, again, to extend that benefit as widely as possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. So how do I go about collecting the data and, you know, manage, supervise the students and mentor them? So my primary appointment is research position. So I do a little less teaching and more research based on the nature of my employment. I also hold what they call as a research chair in digital livestock farming. This means my lot of distribution of efforts is primarily geared towards research. And also, personally, I'm very passionate about research. So this makes me tick. So we have a really nice group here. I get to supervise students from computer science background as well as animal science background for the past 3 years. Every year, few weeks, we put all of these students in two big vans and then drive across Atlantic Canada, stay in multiple regions in Sussex County in New Brunswick, some in PEI. We stay for a few days to a week, install different hardware components and collect data. We have been to more than, I would say, probably a dozen farms this past year alone. So we do a lot of interactions, engagements in terms of field data collection. And then through different data sharing agreements with milk testing companies and also these bigger companies which provide wearables, share and collect data via their own API, application programming interface, or API as they call it, and we collect the data. When we enter the barn, sometimes there are multiple providers. They provide different kinds of services and systems. So it's not only one particular company. Milk testing is provided by a different company. The wearables entirely a different company. The robotic milking system, they belong to typically two or three companies in the world. Those are the bigger companies, rotary milking parlor or the robotic milking machines. So like that, and then if there is a veterinary record or vet health, those services are provided entirely through a different system. So the data itself is very multifaceted and complex and heterogeneous. So we make an effort to collect all of those data. So irrespective of a small scale to large scale farmers, we collect them. Even if it's a small scale farmer, depending on the interaction and even a small whiteboard based records they write, and we take snapshots and some of those handwritten records, we collect those data. So all of these data are pooled into to be able to develop the twinning. Almost all of our research, if you look at, we publish all the mathematical models, algorithms, codings, everything is published for free because we believe strongly in open source. How do we bring down the cost? Can we be, for example, a few years ago, both the Canadian and our American friends, US and European, they passed a law. Hey, you have multiple different mobile phone companies, you have USB-C type, there is a different way of charging your phone. Why there are so many cables? You are confusing the public. And now they made it USB-C is the only way all the phones can be charged. So that's the idea behind it. Can we be able to create a common standards rather than everybody beat their own drums? Is there a common way we can create a consensus so that there is a unified way of providing solutions for the farmers? Can we be able to narrow down the adoption pathway for the producers and farmers? Can we be able to bring down the cost of technology? It does not matter whether you have 60 cows or 300 cows, but still you pay proportionally less based on the number of animals you have. You don't have to sign up for a larger licensing fees for the specific technology you want to adapt. All of these considerations go into in terms of the technology development as well as the validation. So we pay enormous attention and care in the design, development, as well as the validation of the technology. And then when we go to the, we also have a nice farm in the campus. We have about 65 cows in the Truro campus. We work almost on a daily basis. So we do a smaller scale trial validation. And then we do the second scalability at the commercial farms, which is about 250 cows. So this is the nature and the scope in terms of the way we work. We get things done in technology development for the adoption pathways.
Right on. And two thoughts that kind of, or two questions that kind of directly come out of that. One is, you know, you mentioned the different kinds of data that when you come into a barn or you come into an operation, is interoperability a growing concern? And I say this because one assumes that those sources of data will continue to increase. I mean, equipment is increasingly a source of data. You mentioned the environment. There might be multiple operations or multiple facilities at a single operation. And then the second issue is kind of the notion of the commons itself or of data sharing. Because on the one hand, we're talking about using data to create a digital twin. But on the other hand, maybe different people have different twins. Maybe a different advisory company or a different financing company or a different insurance company has a different twin and therefore a different view on the marketplace or a different view of risk. I mean, to what extent should we all be sort of going off the same page? And to what extent do we need to be anticipating the interoperability, the ease by which not just researchers, but farmers and governments and regulators being able to kind of see the big picture? Or am I getting ahead of myself? Are these concerns we should be thinking about? Or is it premature to be concerned about this sort of thing?
Yeah. Just so you are right, because we have already thought through this, there are many folks have given a clear thought. There is also an agency in the EU, ICAR, specifically related to dairy cow data sharing forum. So when we create a standardized protocol, for example, you go to an electronic store, let's say Best Buy, and then you buy a laptop, and then it comes with what we call as figures of merit, which means this laptop will work from this temperature to this temperature. If the temperature goes below plus 5 degrees Celsius, automatically the battery will drain. This is the normal operating conditions. So this figures of merit, irrespective of the brand we buy, they are pretty much the same like cars. It does not matter what model car we buy. They have a specific unique standards with which they have to operate. There is a regulating body that oversees that. IEEE, like an international electrical electronics authority, they oversee some of those. Similarly, for the dairy cow, as well as for the twinning, right now, as of now, there is really no biological or animal farming related standardization protocols available. There is nothing available. But people are wrapping around their head, coming together to be able to create a consensus. So again, as you rightly put it, you know, if there is a finance company or an insurance company or a veterinary health service provider, if everybody beat their own drum, then it will create more chaos and unnecessary burden for the farmers. Farmers does not need a lot of very shiny dashboards. They want to know insights. Can it help to bring down the time to results? Can they make decisions in a very much more sophisticated manner without spending a lot of effort from their side? Can the needle be moved from reactive to predictive through a proactive way? For example, on a Tuesday morning, if there is an anomaly, if it takes 2 to 3 hours to come to a conclusion, can they bring down the time to maybe within 10 minutes, all of the input are being fed into it with a very limited energy spent and time spent from the farmers? Can they arrive at the conclusion within a reasonable amount of time? If the technology can offer that, then there is more of a pull of the technology from the sector. If not, it's basically a push. I developed this tool, that platform, and we try to push to the farmers and make them adopt. So in terms of technology development, there need to be a clearer consensus, clearer understanding of the unified standardization protocols among multiple stakeholders. That also opens up, hey, who owns the data? Eventually, the animals are being managed by the producers, the farmers. Farmers pay certain services. Sometimes they have a subscription model. At the end of the day, some companies basically allow the farmers to provide certain data. They may withhold a large amount of data. So that's also being thought of from the government perspective, from the farm, like we have Dairy Farmers of Canada and different marketing boards and the co-op societies here in Canada. So from their perspective also, at the end of the day, the data belongs to the farmer and of course the animals themselves. So we as a researcher, we act as a liaison, we act as a bridge, as a catalyst to provide solutions, but it has to be a genuinely impact creation, genuinely value is added at a reasonable manner. It's not like a particular company makes money without specific value addition. So those are some of the guards that have been thought through in terms of how do we enable this? What are the things we need to take care of in actually bringing the technology? So again, some of these boundary conditions may not be applicable universally between different species. So those would vary depending on the context and the type of livestock or the bird-based farming that happens.
Well, and I appreciate your point about sort of push and pull, that often there's different dynamics in terms of whether it's the industry itself wanting a technology or external pressures. And for me, a great example of that, of course, is disease transmission. And you know, avian influenza, for example, is something that I know the poultry industry has been very concerned with. Where has this technology, where has disease mitigation, disease tracking, and traceability, where has that played in fostering both industry adoption, but also the evolution of the technology? Because a few times you've sort of alluded to the ways, like, you know, the point about the using video and imaging. To what extent is the need to understand the health of the animals and the larger health of society, how much of that is starting to drive some of this smarter and some of the data collection that we've been describing?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a very important focus. I was a faculty at the University of Guelph many years ago, for about 8 years. So we developed a few technologies for point-of-care diagnostics of avian influenza. So we take a swab, put it in a little small tube, and then we know the results right away, then and there, within 5 minutes. So as of now, this gold standard is the PCR. We send a sample, either blood or fecal or oral swab, to a centralized laboratory, do PCR, and then we know the results via email or phone call if there is a high pathogenic hemagglutinin present in the virus samples. So the goal for at that time, our project was, how do I bring down the time to results? Can I avoid shipping the samples? So we know the results then and there. So that was the focus. We also got a couple of US patented technologies and signed some licensing agreement. Right now, with the help of artificial intelligence and also in the realm of digital twinning, it becomes more and more clear. For example, we have access to different weather patterns. We also know what will happen in the next week or so, more or less in a much more accurate manner, the changes in the weather conditioning of that particular region. So that is known. From the epidemiological perspective, also from the we have this pro-action within Canada. We have a certain way of doing trace and track where the animals are moving, when it is expected to move. From a governance perspective, from the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, Agriculture, Agri-Food Canada perspective, we have a satellite eye view of what's going on, what kind of movement of different animals happening. So there is a different set of data. We also have certain records constantly or periodically, if not in a continuous fashion, with some discrete data points available between multiple farms across the country. So those data can also be taken into account. So all of these data, when we pool together, even though there are some missing data point, with the help of deep learning, we may be able to say with a much more clearer probability that, you know, this is the incidence level in terms of epidemiological decision making, and also making statements in terms of the possibility of that going in an epidemic or a pandemic nature. So the AI digital twinning really comes in handy in terms of predicting the particular incident or event even before that happened, with the help of multi-data, because of the ability to compress data, and also the irrespective of the data volume. Just a decade ago, it was very difficult because the data volume is humongous to be able to process all of the data. We need few weeks. Now the few weeks have become few minutes, actually. Within few minutes, a large volume of data can be processed computationally efficient to provide critical, insightful, predictive values based on that. So there is also a way of incorporating much more what I would call as non-tangible data. Maybe there is a certain somebody is tweeting a certain keyword, and that is kind of creating an anomaly that can be picked up by a web browser or a robot that's constantly scanning the internet. Oh, there is a certain fluke. Maybe there is a possibility. Oh, it's a 0.5% possibility. Then we can factor that into it. So like that, we can create much more complex way of modeling to be able to come up with more precise and accurate way of track and trace and offering value from the governance and safety perspective.
Well, and let me kind of take two questions and fold them into one, which the natural response to that is, you know, how do you communicate that to the decision makers? How do you communicate that to the farmers in the sense that if you know a pandemic or if you know an epidemic is going to happen a week away or even days away, that may not be enough to reach some people, right? It can be difficult to, you know, get people to pay attention to something that they may not want to pay attention to. And then the second part of that I'm kind of curious about is, you know, the broader notion of health and well-being of the animals. Because on the one hand, we're talking about reacting to a bad situation, but a lot of your research is kind of on the preventative side. It's looking at how do we kind of create better welfare, better environmental conditions, a better life for these animals, not just because that ends up benefiting the producer as a whole, but because it ends up creating all sorts of better solutions right through the value chain. How have you been approaching that? What is your argument here? And what role does the technology and data play in either helping to do the knowledge translation, explain to people what may be coming, or on the flip side, help, you know, improve the life, help improve the wherewithal of the animals as a whole?
So in the year 2025, just a year ago, we launched 4 mobile applications. Those are freely available in both the iOS Apple Store and also in the Google Play Store. 2 of them for dairy sector. One is called Dairy Air or Dairy Air Canada. The second one is Moolog. The 2 are for poultry sector, ClackTalk and Clackify. So out of these 4 mobile applications, 3 are based on what we call as bioacoustics. We listen to the vocalizations, the sound of the animals. Based on the sound, we try to assess the mental makeup of these animals. Is the cow going through heat stress? Is the bonding between the mother cow and the calf good enough so that they are happy in terms of welfare? Is there a specific delay in access to the feed? When they queuing up in front of the automated milking machine for milking, is it too much queue? Is the waiting time much more longer than actually it's necessary? If they are standing for longer time, sometimes even I have seen personally the udder of the cow, it starts oozing milk and the milk goes on the ground. That's a clear impediment in terms of the welfare. So some of these technologies look at these smaller telltale signs. Sometimes we brush it off and we look at it from a larger perspective. Small little changes can provide a bigger impact in terms of the well-being of the animal. So by optimizing, we can actually provide enriched quality of life. In terms of the resource optimization, net zero and carbon credit pathway, if I go and tell the farmer, hey, you install the solar panel in all your roof, they will push me back. Who is going to pay the capital cost? That's an expensive proposition, idea I am giving to them. But at the same time, if I tell a poultry farmer, hey, you know what? You do the cleaning of your poultry farm every 53 weeks. All I am suggesting is that move from 53 to 47 weeks, because based on the number of birds you have in the poultry barn, the egg production, the amount of the different volatile organic components in the gas, the vocalization sound and the movement of the birds, these are the certain anomalies that's happening. I'm not asking you to do every quarter. I'm just asking you to move the needle from 53 to just 6 or 7 weeks in front. It may not really cause a bit bigger impact, but it will have a drastic changes in the quality of the life of the birds. The more you keep the birds happy and healthy, the obviously you will see a production increase. And also if they fall into a certain sickness or a health-related challenges, the recovery would be much much quicker. We call this as resilience or the adaptation capacity. When they go to a certain disease, how long it takes for the animal to go to the ground state, the zero health state, normal health state. The faster, the better, the longer, which means we need to tune and tweak and optimize the operating. So by paying, and when we look at the ventilation system in a poultry barn, or even the fan that kicks off when there is a heat-related incident, heat days, hot days. So we provide suggestions, okay, you do it exactly 30 minutes, and this is the exact PPM for your conditions in terms of rotation of the blades of the fan. So small little changes, not much. They use a screwdriver change here, there, small, make tiny little changes, but it gives a bigger impact down the road. So it is not practically possible to look at these smaller changes when we look through the lenses of traditional research. So artificial intelligence and twinning can also provide value for small-scale farmers in terms of enabling the quality of enrichment of the life of these animals at the same time without sacrificing the profitability or creating burdensome in terms of operations of the farm.
Well, and you just gave a great example of sort of the livestock equivalent of precision agriculture, of understanding how to fine-tune processes, operations, and facilities. I'm curious, from your perspective as a researcher, when a lot of people talk about the adoption of precision agriculture, they mostly are looking at crops. To what extent are livestock producers, not just in Canada, but around the world, starting to adopt precision practices when it comes to managing their herds, managing their livestock?
Yeah, I used to be a faculty in Europe for 4.5 years. I was a professor in Netherlands. So I have visited many farms. Recently, we were in the United Kingdom, traveling, crisscrossing different parts of the UK as part of the Canada-UK Livestock Innovation Exchange Program. A bunch of us, they put us in a bus in UK, and we were really traveling the full country, had a better understanding of the landscape of dairy innovation ecosystem. So in terms of the precision livestock farming, it's very similar UK and Canada, but some of the Western European countries like Germany, a little bit of France and Netherlands, they are very quick in terms of adopting this precision animal farming or precision livestock farming in terms of the deployment of different technologies. For example, there are some companies now we can even actually assess the weight of the broiler without touching the broiler, just by scanning and collecting videos and images. There are also different ways of assessing the swine industry health using camera-based technologies. Here in North America, the way because it's very big, huge in terms of the number of animals we handle, by land, also the distance between the farms are also very, very big. So our way of farming is slightly different compared to some of the Western countries. Although in terms of breed, in terms of some of the feeding conditions, it's pretty much similar. We follow same style and same protocols in rearing those animals in terms of production, etc. So there are certain compare and contrasts and analogies we can do, but the technology is slowly evolving. You are very much correct. The uptake of precision agriculture is very high in the crop side, but it is picking up in the animal side, animal farming, but it will continue to grow, I would say.
Right on. And, you know, one of the things we try to do here on the Future Herd podcast is get into the realm of policy and kind of ask guests the kind of policies or the kind of regulations that they think will enable innovation and prosperity. And ironically, one of the reasons I encountered your work was I saw a post, an article you wrote about Canada's AI strategy, kind of criticizing it for being too urban focused. So I'd love to hear you elaborate on that and talk about potentially the way in which not just AI policy, but agricultural policy could kind of work together to enable some of the outcomes that you've been describing in today's episode.
Yeah, sometimes I get a bit frustrated when I see those policies that are mostly geared towards city folks. And for example, even cybersecurity. People think that cybersecurity means only finance or bank or hospitals. But cybersecurity can also happen in a poultry barn or a dairy barn. When a certain attack happens in a food production system or a milk processing system, it can have a havoc in terms of supply chain, in terms of accessing to the food security of our country. When we look at the dual use technologies, I think that for the past few weeks, that's kind of hot buzzword. Everybody talks about dual use technologies, defense, and etc. I say agro defense comes first, because we need to, if there is an attack in agriculture, it is an attack in the country's food security, attack in the country's infrastructure. So please do not treat agriculture as an afterthought or a second thought. Give it a priority along with the major infrastructure such as finance and hospitals and human health, etc. It has to receive the same level of deserving attention. So that's what triggered me to write this article in Policy Options, and asking for the attention of the policymakers. Hey, a bit more focus is needed in agriculture area, especially when we have a very good supply chain management for both in dairy and the poultry system. How do we create a resilience? We get hit from all the time from other countries and so on, but how do we provide a value? How do we create a resilience in the system? Are there things that we could do so that there is a sustainable shared abundance and prosperity among all the stakeholders within the country? Can technology play a role? From the policy perspective, what are the things we could do to enable, make that happen? So even, for example, data sharing, when artificial intelligence is being constantly used for development of tools, platforms, and technologies, I always propose, hey, do not develop a black box model. At the end of the day, farmer has to have a say. It has to be a gray model, so farmers can say, supersede the AI model. No, I don't need you to perform this action. They should have that freedom, independence to completely be the final decision-making authority in terms of the adoption and deployment of the technology. So during the whole technology development adoption process, how do we infuse and make the farmers as the owners? That need to be considered when we develop these governance models and technology development pathways from the government perspective.
Right on. Absolutely. Especially your point about the governance just on the user level, of the user being empowered to override what the system's recommending. And I think what you've demonstrated so brilliantly today is the way in which agriculture is at the forefront of a lot of not just the development of AI technology, but its deployment, its iteration. What I'd like to do as a kind of closing for guests is encourage them to essentially do a shout out. Like, who are the researchers? Who are the people that you're following, either in Canada or around the world, that you would like to see the rest of us kind of plug into or pay attention to? Where are you getting your inspiration from?
I read quite a bit. I also follow different disciplines, not necessarily in agriculture. I look at some folks from Oxford University, Marianne Dawkins, who does a little bit of welfare related research. Some people in the United States, my fellow faculty colleagues, some policymakers in Western Europe, they also, when we meet in conferences and we have conversations, I derive inspirations from them and get new ideas and new directions for my own research.
Right on. And, you know, a final question that I kind of have to ask for my own selfish purposes, where's your kind of next interest? I mean, on the one hand, I suspect that you are absolutely up to your eyeballs in the current research projects you have underway, all of which are fascinating. But I'm kind of curious as to whether someone like yourself is anticipating what comes next and what that might be. What would be the kind of research interests or research projects that you see on your kind of medium to long-term horizon?
Yeah, so we have a plan for 5 years. So for the next 5 years, we know exactly what we are going to do. So it's more of a computational interconnected systems for modern animal farming. How do we bring down the time to results? How do we improve the quality of life? Can we be able to enhance the interactions between the animal and the animal caretaker and the farmer in terms of bonding, in terms of empathy? Can we be able to move the needle from transaction-based relationship to co-creation-based relationship? More often, sometimes when we look at animal farming, we're like, hey, you know what, I give you food or feed, I give you shelter, you give me back egg, you give me milk, you give me meat. So it's more of a transaction based. Yes, it's indeed, it's needed. We are 9 billion people growing and growing. We need to feed protein and all the people. But at the same time, can we infuse the values of human in terms of this co-creation possibility with the animal? I belong to a human kingdom. You belong to animal kingdom. We have both have short lives. Can we create a harmony, synergy through which we can use the technology as a bonding way, as a bridging way to coexist and co-create and travel in this journey? So those are some of the elements we have been looking at. How do we create shared prosperity and abundance for everyone as we navigate these tumultuous times?
Wonderful. What a great way to end what has been a really enjoyable and, in my case, educational episode. Suresh, thank you very much. And I hope you can come back. We're only just scratching the surface of what's possible, especially to your point of thinking about it as co-creation, that we are working with our animals to help feed the planet. Thank you so much, Suresh.
Thank you, Jesse.
One of the things I find so frustrating about contemporary public discourse is everything seems to be an either or rather than a yes and. What I absolutely enjoyed about my conversation with Suresh today is it not only adds a level of nuance to conversations around animal farming, conversations around the use of AI, but it also suggests that there's an incredibly important role for empathy, for centering the concept of care, of co-creation, of really thinking about not just our relationship with animals, but our relationship with each other, with nature, with the world as a whole. Too often we focus on the conflicts, we focus on our differences rather than finding our commonality, rather than finding our passion, our empathy, our desire to make the world a better place. And that is one of the main motivators I have for the Future Herd, is food is one of those places where people tend to open their minds. They tend to indulge in a certain level of curiosity, try new things, entertain new ideas. And that's where I do find that there's this interesting intersection between AI, animal farming, animal welfare, and the concept of intelligence itself, let alone its most pressing application, which is intuition. Which brings me back to me and my goats. One of the things I love experiencing and exploring when I take them on our walks is our combined intuition. On the one hand, I'm trying to read the group because fundamentally I don't control them. We're out beyond the fences, out at the edge of the property where they could just run under the road and get hit by a truck or something. And at the same time, they're enjoying themselves. They're enjoying the experience. So there is both a level of communication and a level of intuition that if I could combine that with the kind of technology that Suresh described, and I sort of already am in the sense of the videos and the observations and the kind of anthropological, is that the right word? No, zoological observations that I'm engaged in. But again, to actually turn this into research, to turn this into data, would allow me to take my skills, my herd, to the next level. And that is really the opportunity, the potential that some of this technology offers, as long as it's accessible, as long as it's open source. And in that sense, we will be returning here on the Future Herd to the subject of AI, to the subject of animal welfare, farm welfare, farmer welfare, plant welfare, and open source. A preview of the future, yes, and an opportunity for us to end this episode. Thanks again for listening. Thefutureherd.ca is the website. Your friends are who you should share this with. And until next time, I'm Jesse Hirsch. We'll talk to you soon.